from deep inside your radio.
Best place to be on a day like this, ladies and gentlemen, where it's cold most of the country, except, of course, here in the... You didn't ask what the weather was. Ladies and gentlemen, you probably already know this story. A union representing the Mexican voices of the Simpsons is fighting for their jobs. Performers who've worked on The Simpsons for 15 years fear losing their jobs because the dubbing company in Mexico is seeking cheaper actors. It says it has asked the cast to continue but needs to hire other actors. It blames the union for using tactics that have meant it has lost ground to rivals in Venezuela and Chile. Imagine, ladies and gentlemen, Mexico getting underpriced by Venezuela and Chile. Mexico's National Actors Association accuses the company Grabaciones y Doblajes Internacionales, thank you, of threatening the livelihoods of 15,000 members by using non-union actors who tend to be paid less. Tend? Isn't that the idea of a union? We're not people who like to fight, says Humberto Velez, who's the voice of Homer Simpson. God, he's got that right. I mean, the only thing we know how to do is act, but we will never let people that aren't interested in agreements take away our rights for their own benefit. How am I supposed to take care of my kids, he asks. He says he earns about... Now, 28 pounds would be... This is from the BBC, that's why I have to... It's 600 pesos. I've seen in American stories $60 used as the figure, so much like the news stories about the American cast of The Simpsons, the figures here are all over the place per episode. And feels obliged to stand up for his union. Union says the company has broken provisions of an agreement that dictates the use of union labor. The company says it's struggling to remain competitive with dubbing in Latin America. A government arbitrator has been appointed to try to resolve the dispute. Says Nancy McKenzie, the Mexican voice of Marge Simpson. Nancy McKenzie, ladies and gentlemen. Quote, you get to the point where you care deeply for your cartoon character. You love them. You go to bed with them at night. It's a sad state, and not because of the money. It's for love. Unquote. Yes, that's Mexico. Hello, welcome to the show.
You're a freckled gal. You're a pug-nosed cutie. Sweet as Charlotte Russe. You got big blue eyes, so I ask you why. Have you dyed your hair chartreuse? Chartreuse,
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 chartreuse.
Though you think it's mighty cute, just wait till the right and tell your ma
that you dyed your hair chartreuse.
Chartreuse,
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 chartreuse.
Though you think it's mighty cute, just wait till I write and tell your ma
that you dyed your hair chartreuse.
In the days of old, when the nights were colder and the girls were true of blue, just think what Pa would have said to Ma had she dyed her hair chartreuse. Chartreuse,
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 chartreuse.
Though you think it's mighty cute, you went too far in that beauty booth
when you dyed your hair chartreuse.
Your hair was black when we lived on Chestnut Street. When you wore pigtails and ginger ale was your most favorite treat. You're a big girl now, so you think it's cuter being fast and fancy loose. But you went too far in that beauty booth when you dyed your hair chartreuse. Chartreuse,
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 chartreuse.
Though you think it's mighty cute, just wait till I write and tell your ma
that you dyed your hair chartreuse. chartreuse,
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 chartreuse.
Though you think it's mighty cute, but just wait till I write and tell your ma. You didn't like black, you didn't like red, you hated blondes. Well, it's no use. You got mad and dyed your hair. Chartreuse.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. What am I talking about? I'm from the French Quarter, New Orleans. Bob, would you go out and check that we're the French Quarter outside?
This is the second home.
Okay, the second home of the homeless. No, actually, San Francisco says that. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the show. That's just the danger, ladies and gentlemen, of opening your mouth and saying what automatically comes out rather than thinking about where you actually are sitting, the French Quarter of New Orleans. Congratulations to Europe. Their craft on Saturn's moon Titan found these amazing pictures. Clearly, there is liquid matter flowing on the surface of Titan, says one of the investigators. And it is, says Dr. Jean-Jacques Dordain, Director General of the European Space Agency, this is a fantastic success for Europe, unquote. Donald Rumsfeld said, exploring Titan is the wrong approach. We should have bombed it. No, he didn't. I made that up, ladies and gentlemen. That's just me fooling around here in the, where is it? French Quarter of New Orleans. You probably heard this already, but just in case you didn't, Iraq has replaced Afghanistan as the training ground for the next generation of professionalized terrorists. This is not a left-wing screed. Not necessarily. It's a report from the National Intelligence Council, the think tank of the CIA director. Yeah, CIA director has a tank. Iraq provides terrorists with, quote, a training ground, a recruitment ground, the opportunity for enhancing technical skills, says the National Intelligence Officer for Transnational Threats, David Lowe. There's even under the best scenario over time the likelihood that some of the jihadists who were not killed there will, in a sense, go home, wherever a home is, and will therefore disperse to various other countries. At the moment, said the National Intelligence Council's director or chairman. Iraq is a magnet for international terrorist activity. That's right. We build a magnet. It's not easy. But now the iron filings are filing. Dwayne Claridge, who spent 4 months in Iraq last year and is the former chief of Arab operations for the CIA's clandestine service, says, quote, people should get realistic. Dwayne, what country do you think you're... People should get realistic and think in terms of our presence being in Iraq for a generation or until democratic stability in the region is reached, unquote. He doesn't say whichever comes first, but we should get realistic, ladies and gentlemen. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be refreshing? There's one attempt at realism. The United States is lowering expectations for both the turnout and the results of the vote in the Iraqi elections, which Tim Russert on Meet the Press this weekend said twice was happening a week from now. I know everybody's in a tizzy about journalistic lapses, but here on live television, Tim Russert, who has a White House spokesperson sitting spokespersoning across the table from him, looks him in the eye and says, twice the Iraqi election is scheduled for exactly 1 week from today. It is, of course. Excuse me, Tim. 2 weeks from today. The United States is lowering its expectations for both the turnout and the results of the vote. The Bush administration is now playing down voter turnout in determining the election's legitimacy, urging Americans not to get bogged in a numbers game. It's an election. What other kind of game are you supposed to get bogged down in? Let's get realistic. I would really encourage people not to focus on numbers, which in themselves don't have any meaning, but to look on the outcome and to look at the government that will be the product of these elections, said a senior administration official under the cloak of anonymity. The official highlighted low voter turnout in the U.S. elections as evidence that polling numbers are not essential to legitimacy. Both the New York Times and the Washington Post report over the weekend that now this would distinguish the Iraq election from ours in a way other than, let's say, the numbers game. Candidates in Iraq in Sunni areas can't even let their names be known, can't even campaign in public for fear for their own lives. That's not a numbers game. That's not like us, is it? I think Bush was out there. He was in fear of something, but, I mean, you still could see him. There is more. Of course, there's more. The U.S. will maintain 150,000 troops in Iraq at least through June and probably longer because of slow progress in training Iraqi forces. This is according to the top U.S. commander of combat operations in Iraq. Hey, wasn't it Bernie Kerik who was going to be our Homeland Security chief who was in charge of training Iraqi security forces for all of 3 months and did such a bang-up job that he didn't have to stay for the whole 18 months that he originally said he was going to stay for, except that his house in New Jersey was already refurbished by the end of the 3 months and then he went home? Yes, it was. The answer to those questions, that multifurcated question is yes. An Army National Guard soldier said this week that the inadequate training and equipment he received had led him to abandon his unit rather than face redeployment or deployment to Iraq. I guess I'm AWOL right now, said Specialist Joseph Jacobo, 46. Not a kid. In a telephone interview from Los Angeles. Among his concerns, Jacobo said, was that he had been unable to find anyone at his Texas training base who could fix his rifle, the primary weapon he would carry in Iraq. The weapon, he said, jams. Hey, big deal. That's what happened to Jesse Lynch. Remember her, Jessica Lynch? Our heroine, our first heroine? Her rifle jammed. Didn't stop her from going. Of course, she didn't know. Quote, they've tried to put old parts in new rifles, he said. It doesn't work. We're having all kinds of problems with our automatic weapons. The soldiers in his Modesto-based National Guard unit went public last month with concerns that they would suffer needlessly high casualty rates in Iraq because of poor training. Airing their concerns publicly, Jacobo said, only seems to have made matters worse. Soldiers suspected of having spoken to newspapers were called cowards and yellow bellies by their superiors. Equipment woes were not addressed. Commanders became more strict, and morale reached new lows. That's called accountability. More about that in a moment. From a British newspaper, The Guardian, troops from the U.S.-led force in Iraq have caused widespread damage and severe contamination to the remains of the ancient city of Babylon, according to a damning report released this weekend by the British Museum. I know, we went through the whole damage in Iraq thing once, but this is now the British Museum, which seems to be concerned. John Curtis, keeper of the museum's ancient Near East department and an authority in Iraq's many archaeological sites, found, quote, substantial damage on an investigative visit to Babylon. The city has been used by U.S. and Polish forces, well, there you go, as a military depot for the past 2 years, despite objections from archaeologists. Quote, this is tantamount to establishing a military camp around the Great Pyramid in Egypt or around Stonehenge in Britain, says the report. Among the damage found by Mr. Curtis, who was invited to Babylon by Iraqi antiquities experts, were cracks and gaps where somebody had tried to gouge out the decorated bricks forming the famous dragons of the Ishtar Gate. I'd say subpoena Warren Beatty. He saw a 2,600-year-old brick pavement crushed by military vehicles, archaeological fragments scattered across the site, and trenches driven into ancient deposits. Vast amounts of sand and earth visibly mixed with archaeological fragments were gouged from the site to fill thousands of sandbags and metal mesh baskets. When this practice was stopped, large quantities of sand were brought in from elsewhere, contaminating the site for future generations of archaeologists. Curtis called for an international investigation by archaeologists chosen by the Iraqis. Hey, another election. The U.S. military defended its operations, but said all earth-moving projects had been stopped, and it was considering moving troops away to protect the ruins. Babylon, a city renowned for its beauty and its splendor 1,000 years before Europe built anything comparable, before Europe was old Europe, this is old Babylon, was chosen as a site for a U.S. military base in April 2003, just after the invasion of Iraq. Military commanders set up their camp in the heart of one of the world's most important archaeological sites and surrounded the enclosed part of the ancient city, Babylon. War in a Babylon, Bob Marley said it, didn't he? I think so. This, ladies and gentlemen, regarding warnings, and then we'll get to other warnings, and then we'll go back to Iraq, hopscotching around the world for your listening pleasure. For months, the U.S. Congress has been investigating activities that violated the United Nations Oil for Food program and helped Saddam Hussein build secret funds to acquire arms and buy influence. A joint investigation by the Financial Times of London and Il Sole 24 Ore, the Italian business daily, shows that the single largest and boldest smuggling operation in the Oil for Food program was conducted with the knowledge of the United States government. Although the financial beneficiaries were Iraqis and Jordanians, the fact remains that the U.S. government participated in a major conspiracy that violated sanctions and enriched Saddam's cronies, a former U.N. official said. That is exactly what many in the U.S. are now accusing other countries of having done. I think, says the U.N. official, it's pretty ironic. Remember after 9/11 when irony was supposed to have died? It moved to Iraq. The operation involved 14 tankers engaged by a Jordanian entity to load at least 7 million barrels of oil for a total of no less than $150 million of illegal profits. Another $50 million went to Hussein's cronies. In February 2003, when U.S. media first published reports of this smuggling effort, then attributed exclusively to the Iraqis, the U.S. mission to the U.N. condemned it as, quote, immoral. However, the two newspapers have evidence that U.S. and U.K. missions to the U.N. were informed of the smuggling while it was happening, and they reported it to their respective governments with no reaction. Oil traders were told informally that the U.S. let the tankers go because Jordan needed oil to build up its reserves in expectation of the Iraq War. Paul Volcker, head of the independent U.N. commission to investigate the Oil for Food program, confirmed Washington allowed violations of the sanctions by Jordan in recognition of its national interests, you see, ladies and gentlemen. That's what we did. We being, of course, the United States of America, not you and me, because we're just out here paying the bill. But there's more. Last week, I shared with you a report from a Swedish newspaper, Expressen, that there had been an hour of warning of possible warning of the tsunami. And a listener wrote in and said, you know, quoting Expressen, the Swedish newspaper, is not almost as bad as quoting the British tabloid News of the World. Okay. So, now, from the distinguished British newspaper, The Independent. A warning that would have alerted countries in the path of the Christmas tsunami was not sent because of red tape. Now, this is a different story. The Independent has learned. If the 30-foot wave had been a typhoon, a mere typhoon, a warning would have been sent. Scientists at the Tsunami Warning Center in Hawaii did not use an existing rapid telecommunication system set up to get warnings around the world almost instantly because the bureaucratic arrangements were not in place. UN officials have revealed the scientists did not use the World Meteorological Organization's global telecommunication system to contact Indian Ocean countries because, quote, the protocols were not in place, unquote. The system is designed to get warnings out within 30 minutes. So it's not just the Swedes, and it's not just tabloids. Although The Independent is now a tabloid, so it is tabloids. Western nations lauded for their generosity following the Southeast Asian tsunami disaster are failing to honor pledges of aid, leaving shortfalls of millions of dollars in the recovery program. Despite the huge response, the United Nations humanitarian appeal is still underfunded by a third. According to an Oxfam report, donations have followed the same pattern as pledges to other recent disasters, such as the earthquake in Iran and Hurricane Mitch in Central America, where initial promises were not honored. The report also attacks Western governments for refusing to push ahead with debt and trade reforms that would free reconstruction money for the region. My favorite tsunami-related story of the week. On Thursday, a Virginia-based missionary group said it had airlifted 300 tsunami victims from the Muslim province of Banda Aceh to Jakarta, Indonesia's capital, where it planned to raise them in a Christian children's home. World Help was working with native-born Christians in Indonesia who want to, quote, plant Christian principles as early as possible in the 300 Muslim children, all younger than 12, who lost their parents in the tsunami. If we can place them in a Christian children's home, their faith in Christ could become the foothold to reach the Aceh people, the World Help website said. The website was changed and the appeal was removed after the Washington Post called to inquire about it. Then the group dropped its plans to place the 300 tsunami victims in a Christian children's home, the group's president told news agencies. Reverend Vernon Brewer, said, once we became aware that the government had refused to let these children be placed in a Christian home, we immediately stopped all fundraising efforts for the remaining 250 Indonesian orphaned children, and appeals were removed from our website. Okay. So that was that, ladies and gentlemen. The fundraising is over for those kids. From World Help. And also on the subject of Iraq, the hunt for biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons in Iraq came to an end nearly 2 years after we went in to get rid of them. The top CIA weapons hunter is home. Analysts are back at Langley, Virginia. Officials who served with the Iraq Survey Group said the violence in Iraq, coupled with a lack of new information, led them to fold up the effort shortly before Christmas. We just found out about it this week, of course. There's no particular news, just some odds and ends in the remaining documents. The government printing office will publish it in book form. The CIA declined to authorize any official involved in the weapons search to speak on the record. But Charles Delfer, our last weapons hunter, is wrapping up his work, and he will not be replaced. Intelligence officials say there's little left for the survey group to investigate because Delfer's last report answered as many outstanding questions as possible. The group has interviewed every person it could find connected to programs that ended more than 10 years ago, and every suspected site within Iraq has been fully searched or stripped bare by insurgents and thieves. Satellite photos show entire facilities have been dismantled, possibly by scrap dealers who sold off parts and equipment to buyers around the world. We received nothing that contradicts the picture we put forward, the intelligence official said. It's possible there is a supply someplace, but what is much more likely is that as time goes by, we will find a greater substantiation of the picture that we've already put forward. A picture originally put forward, ladies and gentlemen, on this broadcast. I don't like to, pat myself on the back. We learned this week, by the way, the Television Critics Association is meeting in its semi-annual confab in Pasadena, California. And at that confab, we learned that, this is a parenthetical observation, we learned that Ving Rhames, starring in a remake of Kojak, that was the ostensible news, that he's starring in a remake of Kojak, but deep down in the story, we learned that when he was challenged by critics as to why a black actor was playing a Greek-American detective character, Kojak, Ving Rhames said, well, my real first name is Irving. So as Irving might say, who already told you about WMDs, baby?
We're between a rock and a hard place. Not losing face yet, but don't place your bet. We're on our hands and knees, stripped down to our BVDs in the searing heat, eating MREs, tearing apart clunkers, poking around buckers, and climbing up trees. There's nothing to flaunt, there ain't nothing to seize. The body of evidence is gone, we can't get what we want. It's a demonstration of the reason for our invasion, to nail down the persuasion, despite our threats and bribes and pleas. We've found no WMDs. Said without compunction, now we're at the junction of fibbing and lying, so maybe it's time to administer extreme unction to the weapons of mass dysfunction. We're withdrawing Team Alpha and certain Team Beta. Wait a minute, this is later. We've given up on the honchos. Everybody in the deck of weasels could just sit on their haunches. We're setting up the easel to paint a new picture. Playing new hunches. The grunts and the drivers will tell us what we lack. Help walk the cat back. Return us to that state of ease when we find some WMDs. We need some factual satisfaction. We're losing traction. It's the post-war poster kid. It could remove from what we did any hint of future faction. These weapons of mass distraction. Powell needs some air. Blair needs a towel. The pressure is mounting. Life is a fountain. There's an answer no more. The question is what the war was for before, and is it still at the fore? The porous reports over which Powell would pour, is there truth galore on the cutting room floor? Are we sore? Do Powell and Blair care when the stuff isn't there? As rare as a Suman Crees, we found no WMDs. Please pardon the interruption, we've wrapped the production, but these questions linger like a hunchback bell ringer in a den of corruption. These weapons of mass disruption. At those first reports you couldn't sneeze. WMDs aimed who knows where, in the water, in the air, at us, at our friends. No one knows where it ends, but now no one knows where it begins. Even monsters have wings while shedding their skins. Now we're the ones who kicked out the inspectors. You'd suspect us. They could direct us, resurrect us, at least lend us their BS detectors. Cause it's just like Wall Street. It's fear versus greed. We all need to move on. Pump down the volume. Reduce the dBs. Take a week off. Some time in Belize. Or maybe we could actually find some WMDs. The pictures were strong, we had great reception. Just trying to clear up a misperception. Were we facing dangers, or did some rangers just have an inaccurate conception involving weapons of mass deception?
WMDs.
Searching from here to Asia for those weapons of mass displeasure. Trying to drive to extinction those weapons of mass distinction.
WMDs.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Oh, it's me. Yeah, I'm here. In a rare reflective look back on his first term, President Bush told Knight Ridder newspapers this week that he learned a lesson about, quote, the unintended consequences of my words, recalling the expression, bring him on, with reference to insurgents who wanted to kill Americans, and his pledge to get Osama bin Laden dead or alive. After the bin Laden remark, Bush said, I got back to the White House and Laura said, what did you say that for? Well, it was just an expression that came out. I didn't rehearse it. He's not really sorry. He's almost sorry. Let's get to the really sorries, shall we? Although, the spokesperson, the aforementioned spokesperson on Meet the Press on Sunday, Dan Bartlett, now counselor to the president, not just a spokesperson, an actual counselor, said, I believe the quote was, "President knows that his words have meaning." This just in. Prince Harry has apologized after being pictured on the front page of a British tabloid newspaper in a Nazi uniform which he wore to a fancy dress party. It's what we call a masked ball or masquerade party. The newspaper showed the prince with a cigarette and drink in hand wearing a swastika armband. The 20-year-old said, "I am very sorry if I caused any offense or embarrassment to anyone." Buckingham Palace said in a statement it was a poor choice of costume, and I apologize. That was a statement issued by the palace, but attributed to the prince. On Harry's shirt collar was the badge of the Wehrmacht, the German Defense Force. The 250-guest party's theme was Natives and Colonials. But there's more. The Prince of Wales, Prince Harry's dad, has been warned by one of his senior advisors that he must act urgently to separate both of his sons from, quote, a social scene that thinks racism and bigotry are quite funny, unquote. Prince Harry's behavior had reportedly deteriorated over a number of years, and he'd been allowed to, quote, get away with an awful lot. It is hoped, says this story, that his training at Sandhurst Military Academy will lead to a marked change in behavior and attitude. Well, not so fast. The senior military chief who runs Sandhurst, Britain's elite army officer training academy, has been forced to apologize after a photograph was published showing officer cadets dressed as Nazis. What else? It's right here. Black and white. Pictures taken at Sandhurst and published in yesterday's London Daily Mail show several officers wearing Nazi uniforms and swastikas. One photo shows an officer cadet making a Hitler salute. The photographs are hugely embarrassing for the army. Sandhurst's commandant, Major General Andrew Ritchie, said he deeply regretted any offense that may have been caused by the picture of the officer cadets. Guidelines were put in place a couple years ago to stop such behavior. The policy today is very clear, says Ritchie. These photographs do not reflect the high standards of duty and service. Blah, blah, blah. I thought they were, weren't they fighting the Nazis? Some of them were, I guess. Now to figure of speech apologies. Kent Brownridge, an executive of Wenner Media, who oversees Us Weekly, had said to a newspaper regarding the Brad Pitt-Jennifer Aniston split-up, quote, "For a celebrity weekly, this is our tsunami." This week he said, "I used an inappropriate metaphor, and I'm sorry that I in any way compared a monumental tragedy in human life to this. I didn't mean to offend anybody." And Dateline Cologne, Germany, Cologne Archbishop, not Dateline the smell juice, Dateline the actual city, Cologne Archbishop Cardinal Joachim Meisner has issued an apology for remarks made in a sermon comparing abortion to the mass murder crimes of Nazi leader Adolf Hitler and Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin. "I'm sorry that it's come to this," the Catholic Archbishop said about the controversy. So, be careful of your figures of speech, ladies and gentlemen. That's good advice from the folks here at Le Show. The United States has reportedly expressed regret to Germany. Germany's in the news this week a lot. Hitler and Germany, it's almost like the 40s. The United States has reportedly expressed regret to Germany over the kidnapping of a German citizen of Lebanese origin. The man claims he was mistakenly held prisoner for months as a terrorism suspect. According to Monday's edition of Der Spiegel, Washington has used unofficial channels to apologize to Berlin for kidnapping Khaled El-Masri. It was an apparent case of mistaken identity. Two U.S. radio disc jockeys who abused an Indian call center agent in a comedy skit on outsourcing went off the air for a day suspended by the radio station and its parent company. The Star and Buck Wild Show on Philadelphia's Power 99 FM prides itself on walking the edge. On December 15th, we crossed it. We know the pain racial slurs cause and apologize that this comedy segment went too far. Unquote. The free daily newspaper that the New York Times has just bought in Boston is the subject of a controversy. It's called The Metro. Two officials of the paper who made racial slurs at company meetings in 2003 resigned this week. And an apology was issued for their statement. The racially disparaging remarks were apologized for by one of the officials, who said he made them inadvertently while translating a joke into English. And apropos of an item that was mentioned earlier in this broadcast, of the 7,471 people who have filed to run for the election in Iraq, and what a great day that's going to be, ladies and gentlemen. We're all very proud. Only a handful outside the relatively safe Kurdish areas have publicly identified themselves, and the locations for the 5,700 polling places have not been announced because they could be targets for attacks. So you figure out where to vote. A flyer was passed around one city by the United Iraqi Alliance. It listed the names of 37 candidates. The 188 others, the flyer said, could not be published. Our apologies for not mentioning the names of all the candidates, the flyer said, but the security situation is bad, and we have to keep them alive. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. You know the Michael Jackson trial is starting, exactly a week from today, Tim Russert? No, a couple weeks. And the satellite trucks are already parked there. The leaks about what may or may not be said at the trial are already starting. And this week, E! Entertainment Television announced that because of the judge's ruling that there will not be cameras in the courtroom. That could be distracting at the Michael Jackson trial. So E! Announced it will be doing a daily dramatic recreation of testimony in the trial every day, and announced that it was beginning the process of casting.
Okay, Silesia, who do we have here?
This is Mr. Bruce Wayne Cochran.
Bruce Wayne Cochran.
That's right.
Interesting. Was somebody in your family a Batman fan?
Interestingly enough, my 8-year-old brother was a big Batman fan.
Ah.
My mom and dad allowed him to name me.
Uh-huh.
That's how I got it.
I see.
Very proud of it. But BW is how I'm known professionally.
Okay, that explains why it's... Mm-hmm. All right, that's probably more than enough information. you know what we're doing here. We're doing a program, a reenactment program of the Michael Jackson trial.
Mm-hmm.
And we... your look is just so fabulous.
Thank
that
you.
That's, of course, why we called you in. Why you, frankly, I have to tell you this, you're the first person we've seen.
Oh.
Because the look is so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, I hope you don't mind my asking.
No.
Is that your own hair?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some processing and so forth
in
connection with it,
uh-huh.
But it's growing out of my scalp, if that's the question.
Yeah, that was the question.
Okay.
Fine. Let me give you just a little of how we see the character,
and
then you can mm-hmm. take that and use that in what you're going to do.
Okay.
Clearly, we're going to see Michael every night. Mm-hmm. Not every night, of course, he's not going to have a speaking part. Many of the shows, he's just going to be sitting there listening to testimony of others, and we have to feel through seeing what he's feeling. So, and your look is so great for that.
Thank you.
He's a vulnerable guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a complicated guy.
Okay.
He's a guy with a lot on his mind.
Okay.
He's a guy who is aware he's in trouble, but yet he's living in this fantasy world maybe where he feels that everything is going to turn out fine and all he has to do is just, you know, smile.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting thing.
Uh-huh.
That's something to play with.
Okay.
He's obviously he's on trial for some serious charges. We have to portray some of that, although obviously he's also a superstar, the one-time king of pop, and we want to see some of that coming through too.
Gotcha.
Okay. You've got the script. You've had a look at the sides. This
yes,
is obviously
sir.
Just not real testimony because, of course, the trial hasn't started yet. but just, you know, give us the idea.
What I'd be reading with...
With Silesia, yes.
With me.
Okay.
Mr. Jackson, are you familiar with the young man sitting in this courtroom today?
Now, doesn't the young man's name is crossed out blacked out.
Yeah.
Should I just say blank or make up a name?
No,
that
came from the deposition.
Mm-hmm.
I'd just make up a name.
Make up a name.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I am familiar with Evan. Only in the sense that he was a fan of mine.
BBW, mm-hmm. First of all, that's it's a little weird and spooky.
Thank you.
That does happen to be the... I can't...
Oh.
But is that the voice you were going to use? I mean, is...
Well...
This is an audition. I mean, I'd like to hear the...
No, I know what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Basically, I'm normally hired for my look.
Well, it's a great look, but...
This is the first speaking part I'm actually...
I see. Okay, well, you know what, Michael... I mean, you look so much like Michael Jackson.
Thank
we can't
you.
Possibly... We don't have a budget for dubbing or the time, for that matter, or the money for the time for the dubbing, for the budget. You know what Michael Jackson sounds like.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Just give me an idea, your best shot at it.
All right. So is it all right with you if we start again?
I think it's a great idea.
All right.
Mr. Jackson, are you familiar with the young man in the courtroom today?
I certainly am. His name is Barney, and he's a fan of mine. We have been on some trips.
B.W., Bruce, mm-hmm. That doesn't sound... I mean, is that the best voice you've got?
Well, I mean, he does. To me, that's how he sounds.
No, I mean, I mean...
Tommy Mottola is very, very, very devilish. Tommy Mottola is very, very, very devilish. I mean,
I've worked on that line, uh-huh. And I just use that as a reference, of
okay.
course.
Okay, yeah.
The look is really what...
No, I understand.
I'm
understand.
Selling.
If you just want to give it another shot, otherwise we got it on tape.
What?
I forgot to tell you, we are taping.
Oh.
But, I mean, mm-hmm. If you have another approach or another...
No, I got you.
...thing you want to try...
I got you. I got
this
you.
Would be the time before mm-hmm. we...
Tommy Mottola is very, very, very dangerous. Tommy Mottola is very, very, very dangerous.
All right.
Yes, I'm familiar with the young man. He's a fan of mine. His name escapes me.
Okay. Bruce, if I close my eyes, mm-hmm. it sounds like my Aunt Karen. If I open my eyes and try not to listen, it's Michael Jackson. So
well,
that's just a choice we've got to make.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you for coming in. And I really appreciate it. And,
my pleasure. Thank you.
You know, I'm sure this is going to be a difficult time for you one way or the other, but good luck.
Well, my sister-in-law has already mm-hmm. Asked me during the duration of the trial not to come over and visit her while her kids are at home. So thank you for that.
No, thank you. Bye-bye.
Someone picked you from the bunch. One glance is all it took. Now it's much too late for me to take a second look. Oh, baby, give me one more chance.
Show me that love.
Won't you please let me
back in your heart?
Oh, darling, I was blind to let you go.
Let you go, baby.
And now I see you in his arms. I want you back.
I want you back.
I do now.
I want you back.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
I want you back.
Hey, hey, now. Trying to live without your love is one long sleepless night.
Let me
show you, girl, that I know wrong from right. You're a street you walk on. I leave tear stains on the ground. Modeling the girl I didn't even want around. Listen.
Pa 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 pa
out of court.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Le Show with tales of alternative approaches to accountability. President Bush told the Washington Post, he's doing this series of interviews, pre-inauguration interviews, he told the Washington Post over the weekend the public's decision to reelect him was a ratification of his approach toward Iraq, and there was no reason to hold any administration officials accountable for mistakes or misjudgments in pre-war planning or managing the violent aftermath. Quote, we had an accountability moment, and that's called the 2004 elections. The American people listened to different assessments made about what was taking place in Iraq, and they looked at two candidates, and they chose me. Unquote. Speaking of accountability, while he was a Sergeant Grainer, convicted of abuse at Abu Ghraib, sentenced to 10 years, was not allowed to present any evidence that higher-ups knew or approved or ordered him to do what he was doing. That's accountability. And meanwhile, two U.S. defense contractors being sued over allegations of abuse at Abu Ghraib have been awarded valuable new contracts by the Pentagon, despite demands that they should be barred from any new government work. Three employees of CACI International and Titan working at Abu Ghraib as civilian contractors were separately accused of abusive behavior. CACI interrogators used dogs to scare prisoners, placed detainees in unauthorized stress positions, and encouraged soldiers to abuse prisoners, despite human rights groups' demands. CACI International has been awarded a $16 million renewal of its contract. Titan has been awarded a new contract worth $164 million. Accountability, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, CBS News issued its report this week assessing blame for the report on President Bush's National Guard service using the questionable documents supplied by Bill Burkett, a well-known anti-Bush activist. Among the conclusions in the report, CBS News management should require correspondents to regularly and fully participate to the maximum extent possible in the preparation, vetting, and pre-broadcast screening of stories. Management should review instances where the press of other responsibilities does not permit this. Because apparently Dan Rather was so busy, according to the report, drained from having covered the Republican convention and Hurricane Francis, that he exercised almost no oversight over the story. Four CBS News executives have been fired. Dan Rather continues as the anchor of the CBS Evening News, from which post he will step down in March to presumably do work at 60 Minutes. It's a bad day at BlackRock.
In 3, 2.
I'm Dan Rather. Come home to the CBS Evening News, weeknights now at 6 on that good-looking Channel 54.
Okay, Dan, that's a wrap.
Thank the good Lord. A little like begging, don't you think, Hoss? Guess he's gone on his 5. All right, then. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Dan.
A little like begging. It's more desperate than a 3-legged pony in a Category 4 storm. Come home, my wrinkled white honey. Goodness gracious, nobody has to this day proved that story to be untrue. And here we are renting our garments. Where's that rending? People in the newsroom treating me like a pariah. Evening. Not even a look up. That's a fine howdy-do. Well, that's no howdy-do.
Cheer up, Brother Rather.
Brother Murrow's ghost. It's been longer than a bass fisherman's lie since we've talked.
You haven't needed me.
I haven't needed you. I haven't needed you like a prairie dog pup doesn't need its mother. I haven't needed you like a hungry armadillo doesn't need an anthill. I haven't...
All right. You've needed me. I'm sorry. There. That's not so hard to say.
Brother Murrow, I apologize for that report. I apologize to my colleagues at CBS News. I apologize to everybody and his brother more heartfelt than a co-ed's kiss.
I don't remember you apologizing to me.
You're a ghost.
So suddenly a ghost doesn't have feelings?
Well,
you think because of my rock-solid integrity and my clipped delivery and my lack of palpability that I don't have emotional needs just like you?
Well, you know...
CBS News is the institution I helped build with reporting from a London in the height of the Blitz.
I do know that, sir. And now with all these websites attacking us, it's more like the blight of the hits.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Brother Rather. But to see that institution rocked by scandal over documents that you couldn't even bother to authenticate...
Oh, no, sir, please. Even a ghost should know this. It wasn't me who couldn't authenticate those documents. I was covering Hurricane Francis, scuffing my shoe leather out where the big wind blows.
That's what you should be apologizing for, Daniel.
Hmm?
You think I ever presented a story and then hid behind the skirts of my producer?
Well, as I recall, sir, your producer didn't wear skirts. Fred,
that's
was...
another thing. These young girls with their short skirts and floppy hairdos.
Well,
tell him we're coming with the camera crew, whether he likes it or... Brother Rather, what are you... walking down the hallway talking to yourself?
No, sir, not quite hardly. Talking with the ghost of Ed Murrow, but reception did seem to get a little weak right around your office.
Talking with the ghost of Ed Murrow? Daniel, I've heard about this, but I always thought it was in the what's the frequency, Kenneth, category of amusing but spurious anecdotes.
Hard to know what's spurious around here anymore, Michael. A fellow can read in the papers that... people at 60 don't want me back when I leave the evening news. That hurts, sir. Hurts worse than a veal calf on a rusty hook.
Brother Rather, the Wednesday edition of 60 Minutes always felt to us like Cadillac cat food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Same name, different product.
Oh, I know.
And what happened with you on that broadcast happened. It didn't just hurt you. It was as if I and Brother Safer and Brother Bradley and Brother Simon and Leslie Stahl had all done whatever it was that you did.
I didn't do anything except read the damn prompter.
All right. It was as if we'd all done what you didn't do. So, you know, maybe it's understandable if... deep down, we all wished you were going back to 48 hours instead.
It hasn't been on the schedule in 2 years, Hoss.
That doesn't really affect my argument. The way it supports it...
Tell him maybe it's time to get off his high horse, too.
I'll handle this, Ed. Michael, you know, earthquake deep and plumb line true, that if this story hadn't been about President Bush, we wouldn't have had nearly this amount of firepower incoming. Focusing on the narrow question of the documents when the story in question...
Brother Rather, if it hadn't been about President Bush, your shop might not have been so eager to rush it onto air.
Michael, reality check, please, sir. I'm still the straight shooter I've always been, more down the middle than the space between the double yellow lines. You know, if we'd just wanted to go after the president, we would have gone with the story about the phony documents behind the claim that Iraq tried to buy uranium from Niger. That story was rock solid, nailed down tighter than Brother Brokaw's upper lip.
So I heard, but it wasn't your story, Daniel. Look, amigo, you know if it's up to me, you're welcome back to 60 with open arms. I still think, as you do, that there's room in your legacy for another big story. But as you know, in our shop, there's... more than one shopkeeper.
I appreciate that, Michael. Look, I'll let you go, and sir, looks like you have an assignment cooking.
We're just trying to get Jennifer Aniston to do a sit-down.
No. No, Godspeed to you, sir.
All right, Daniel, take care of yourself.
Maybe it's better that I'm not welcome at 60.
I once interviewed Sammy Davis Jr. in his home.
Thanks, Brother Murrow. We'll talk to you later, too. And, sir, please. I'm sorry.
I appreciate that, Dan. Good night and good luck.
Yes, sir. Not the corniest sign off in broadcasting, but damn close.
I heard that. Oh.
Sorry. Sorry.
Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is going to conclude this edition of the show. The program returns next week at this same time over these same stations. That's our hope. On NPR worldwide throughout Europe, on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz. Around the world, on your computer, whenever you want it, at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, and as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow and on channel 108 of Sirius Satellite Radio. Think of it. And it would be just like an accountability moment if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Service is by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. And our thanks to Bob Dunn here at WWL-TV in New Orleans for rendering me inaudible for a brief portion of today's broadcast. Muchas gracias, mi amigo. Inaudible only to myself, I should add. Ladies and gentlemen, the show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica. We'll discuss those facilities next week. Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans, Louisiana.